American Anarchy, Democracy in America, A Pre-Mortem, Part 1. Do you suffer from a profound sense of world-weary despair and nihilism, overwhelmed by the complexity of life? Do you feel that we are living in a violent age of rage, disharmony and disequilibrium, on the precipice of civil war? Do you feel trapped in a broken economic model that's trashing the living world and threatens the lives of our descendants? A model that excludes billions of people while making a handful unimaginably rich, then sorts us into winners and losers, and blames the losers for their misfortune? Do you feel left out, left behind, and filled with inchoate vulnerability? That the unique promise of American democracy, of opportunity for all, not to just survive but to thrive and get ahead, is on life support? That ubiquitous and rancorous cacophony is drowning out all reasonable, rational, and civil discourse? And that our interaction with each other has become so polarized and tribal that you are filled with a sense of dread, or worse, apathy, at the possibility of voicing reasonable dissent? Do you feel hopeless and defeated to prevent the sixth mass extinction through the well-documented existential threat of climate change, while the world blithely allows the slow systematic matricide of Mother Earth, tortured and slowly suffocated by a blanket of CO2 at the hands of her own ungrateful children? And finally, do you feel that democracy in America is teetering on a knife's edge between maintaining a democratic republic or succumbing to the tidal wave of fascist authoritarianism that appears to be engulfing numerous nations globally?
This is Ed Fletcher in Vienna.
Take two, Q Howard.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressmen because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take...
Have you had enough? Are you mad as hell? If not, why not? While it may not be of much consolation now, you are not alone in your growing demoralized nihilistic worldview. Hopefully, after viewing this film, you will come away with a better understanding of the pervasive malignant zeitgeist we now find ourselves living under, perhaps even inspiring you to summon a little moral courage to proactively confront, and yes, resist the sprouting existential threat to American democracy. And in the process, a renewed sense of hope about the future. Here's the big question. As Donald Trump takes the wrecking ball of chaos and anarchy to our hallowed American democracy, what does he intend to construct in its place? For tyranny and anarchy are never far apart. For the answer to that compelling question, one has to look no further than the Christo-Fascist Manifesto, Project 2025, essentially the imposition of a reactionary patriarchal Christian flavor of Muslim Sharia law, with ostensibly unlimited imperial powers granted to the executive branch. But the larger question is, what are you personally willing to sacrifice, if need be financially, and yes, physically, to protect and defend American democracy from foreign, and now predominantly domestic enemies, as enshrined in the sacrosanct U.S. Constitution? If you are neutral or just silent in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor as the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And are you able and willing to take it to the streets with fellow Americans in peaceful, nonviolent demonstrations to pursue the ultimate triumph over Trump's tyranny, for however long it may take? Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Margaret Mead. On January 20, 2025, as I witnessed the ominous, excruciating spectacle of the coronation of Emperor Donald Trump, the self-anointed monarch of America, surrounded by obsequious, sycophantic courtiers and courtesans, other assorted adoring political prostitutes and technocratic oligarchs, like some adapted dark Shakespearean farce in a reality TV dystopic miniseries. I was reminded of another day of notorious infamy, December 7, 1941, when the United States of America was surreptitiously attacked by the Empire of Japan, and resultant America's unfledging commitment, along with the other democratic nations of the world, to confront the worldwide threat of the domination of fascist totalitarianism. The Second World War, the most devastating and destructive war in the history of the world in terms of loss of life and sheer depravity. In the words of Winston Churchill, "United we stand, divided we fall. Divided, the Dark Age returns. United we can save and guide the world." Just as December 7, 1941 is an infamously symbolic date in America as a cautionary echo of history, so it is now with November 5, 2024, where the dire consequences of another term as president by Donald Trump are no longer some overly alarmist abstraction, but that the unthinkable has become the sobering reality. Essentially an internal, self-inflicted, slow-motion Pearl Harbor, the culmination of incremental and cumulative damage done over four decades of a calculated subversive radical right, neoliberal assault on American liberal democratic ideals. And now in 2025, codified in the radical right, Christian nationalist neo-fascist manifesto, Project 2025. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. George Santayana. Now, that the shock and period of mourning is over, it is time for an unflinching, sustained resistance to the impending autocracy by whatever means necessary. It is time to take it to the streets. Never let us forget that the genesis of this great American experiment of democracy was forged in the crucible of righteous populist indignation by common, but not ordinary citizens just like yourself, to revolt against another tyrannical monarch. Every revolution begins with citizen rebel zero. To paraphrase President Roosevelt on December 8, 1941, no matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated coup d'etat, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. I believe that I interpret the will of the American people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves and the Constitution to the utmost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. November 5th enhances the potential for irreconcilable political conflict, perhaps devolving into violence by radical right civilian paramilitary. There is no blinking at the fact that the right to live in a free and open democratic society is in grave existential danger and will force each of us to have to choose between living in a democracy or under fascism. With confidence in the American democratic institutions and the rule of law with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph of a free and fair democracy again. That said, now what? By now, because the percipient critical thinking among us are acutely aware of the emerging perverse political landscape, this film will not focus on the well-documented potential for the massive political and social chaos of another Trump administration. Rather, it will endeavor to proffer the following. How did this happen? And where do we go from here? But first, before we can offer cogent explanations and execute realistic solutions, we need to acknowledge and agree on some basic, unsettling assumptions, formerly known as facts. This now is the new normal. Return ticket to normalcy, canceled, and we have met the enemy, and the enemy is us, and it's time to disabuse ourselves that this is just a transient erratic swing of the pendulum, which has swung so far to the right that it's now stuck. The inherent moral hazard of greed and the naked pursuit of power are hard-coded into the human species. The oligarchs will not go quietly into the night. We can have democracy in this country, or we can have great wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both. Louis D. Brandeis, Supreme Court Justice. It is long past the time for a complete overhaul and recalibration of political strategy by the opposition. No more playing defense. Hope is a tactic, not a viable strategy. No more showing up to a knife fight with a dull butter knife when the other side is packing an AR-15. The best defense is a strong, relentless offense. To not surrender to fear and complexity, but rather, proactively embrace the daunting challenge we face. In other words, game on. And finally, the current political predicament is the result of over four decades of the execution of a comprehensive master plan, essentially a cabal, by the radical right faction of the Republican Party to disrupt and, if possible, destroy long-held progressive ideals and principles that American democracy was founded upon, but are perceived as a threat to the continued accumulation of massive wealth. History records the genesis of the strategic execution of the master plan by the neo-fascist libertarian regime, with the rise of economic and political domination of neoliberalism and the fusion of Christian nationalism with the election of Ronald Reagan as president in 1980. We must endeavor to persevere and be prepared for a long, possibly decades, contentious, and potentially violent confrontation with the opposition. Positive change will require patience, but more importantly, fierce fortitude and a willingness for shared sacrifice. How did this happen? History doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. Mark Twain, 1874. How did we get here? To better understand the social phenomenon of the improbable ascension of the demagogue, the sybaritic Philistine Donald Trump, and the so-called Make America Great Again or MAGA movement, and its cultural and political cultish following, it is instructive to study how dictators in relatively recent history have managed to gain absolute and enduring power over their respective social and political constituencies, and more significantly, the zeitgeist. The most cogent and relevant example, which echoes and indeed rhymes with recent modern history with the most congruence, is the rise of Adolf Hitler and the oppressive autocratic political movement of Nazism in the fourth decade of the 20th century. What follows is an exegesis with many references from two esteemed literary historians, Aldous Huxley, from his nonfiction Brave New World Revisited, specifically his most prescient chapter, Propaganda Under a Dictatorship, written after World War II in 1958, following his novel Brave New World in 1932, of a profoundly prophetic cautionary parable of the impact of technology on the society, and Timothy Snyder's best-selling fearless and socially compelling nonfiction On Tyranny in 2017, just after the first election of Donald Trump 1.0 as President of the United States. Hitler's dictatorship differed in one fundamental point from all its predecessors in history. It was the first dictatorship in the present period of modern technical development, a dictatorship which made complete use of all technical means for the domination of its own country. Through technical devices like the radio and the loudspeaker, 80 million people were deprived of independent thought. It was thereby possible to subject them to the will of one man. Earlier dictators needed highly qualified assistants even at the lowest level, men who could think and act independently. The totalitarian system in the period of modern technical development can dispense with such men. Thanks to modern methods of communication, it is possible to mechanize the lower leadership. As a result of this, there has arisen the new type of the uncritical recipient of orders. The parallel we find here is Trump's mastery of media domination of social consciousness through often outlandish and easily disprovable lies, designed to get and keep attention through shock value, while at the same time gratifying his insatiable narcissistic ego, monopolizing eyeball time attention on mainstream media, and most especially internet social networks like X, formerly known as Twitter. Since Hitler's day, the armory of technical devices at the disposal of the would-be dictator has been considerably enlarged, as well as the quaintly antiquated radio, the loudspeaker, the moving picture camera, and the rotary press. The contemporary propagandist can make use of television to broadcast the image as well as the voice of his client, and now predominantly the ubiquitous internet. Thanks to technological progress, George Orwell's Big Brother can now be almost as omnipresent as God. This sea change, which amounts to a technocracy, creates a radical pace of change which emotionally overwhelms and profoundly disorients people, making them even more vulnerable to herd poisoning. It is contended that this accelerated rate of technological and social change leaves people disconnected and suffering from shattering stress and disorientation, or future shocked, which author Alvin Toffler stated that the majority of social problems are symptoms of future shock. In his discussion of the components of such shock, he prophetically popularized the term information overload, or TMI, too much information, never more relevant than today. While the social structural consequences of techno-shock are essentially the same as future shock, they differ considerably in significant ways. Techno-shock picks up from where future shock of the evolution to a super-industrial society left off circa 1960s, to a society of a highly accelerated non-industrial information age, fundamentally and now indivisibly essential to the structural function and operation of contemporary society, an ostensible technocracy, and today, the primary force vector, and yes, perpetrator of techno-shock is unfettered, uncurated feral social networks like Facebook and X. In the contemporary perversion of what we call democracy today, it breeds an addictive form of inverted totalitarianism, where democracy has become subordinate to and the handmaiden of the oligarchs of neoliberal capitalism through the promulgation of social networks. Like someone who is trapped in a radical religious cult, in this case, democracy is being held captive by a white male-dominated patriarchal Christian nationalist cult that worships only power and wealth. Essentially, as discussed in Neil Postman's 1992 book, Technopoly. Television was Alpha Vector Zero for the delivery of toxic techno-shock, or Future Shock 2.0, and later, circa 2000, metastasizing into Omnipresent Web 2.0, known as Participatory Web and Social Web, which refers to websites that emphasize user-generated content of social networks, ease of use, participatory culture, and interoperability and compatibility with other products, systems, and devices for end users. Since Hitler's day, a great deal of work has been carried out in those fields of applied psychology and neurology, which are the special province of the propagandist, the indoctrinator, and the brainwasher. In the past, these specialists in the art of changing people's minds were empiricists. By a method of trial and error, they had worked out a number of techniques and procedures, which they used very effectively without, however, knowing precisely why they were effective. Today, the art of mind control is in process of becoming a science. The practitioners of this science know what they are doing and why. They are guided in their work by theories and hypotheses solidly established on a massive foundation of experimental evidence. To be a leader means to be able to move the masses. Hitler's aim was first to move the masses, and then, having pried them loose from their traditional loyalties and moralities, to impose upon them, with the hypnotized consent of the majority, a new authoritarian order of his own devising. Hitler had a deep respect for the Catholic Church and the Jesuit order, not because of their Christian doctrine, but because of the machinery they have elaborated and controlled, their hierarchical system, their extremely clever tactics, their knowledge of human nature, and their wise use of human weaknesses in ruling over believers. Ecclesiasticism without Christianity, the discipline of a monastic rule, not for God's sake or in order to achieve personal salvation, but for the sake of the state and for the greater glory and power of the demagogue turned leader. This was the goal toward which the systematic moving of the masses was to lead. And so it goes with Trump, a notorious hedonic heathen, pandering to the essentially white religious right Christo-fascists, on a purely transactional basis to gain the considerable support of the true believers who were willing to transcend Trump's notorious moral ambiguities to secure their Christo-theocratic agenda, including banning in any form, at any stage of pregnancy of an abortion, even in cases of rape, incest, or saving the life of the mother. The first principle from both Hitler and Trump started was a value judgment. The masses are utterly contemptible. They are incapable of abstract thinking and uninterested in any fact outside the circle of their immediate experience. Their behavior is determined, not by knowledge and reason, but by feelings and unconscious drives. It is in these drives and feelings that the roots of their positive as well as their negative attitudes are implanted. To be successful, a propagandist must learn how to manipulate these instincts and emotions. The driving force which has brought about the most tremendous revolutions on this earth has never been a body of scientific teaching which has gained power over the masses, but always a devotion which has inspired them, and often a kind of hysteria which has urged them into action. Whoever wishes to win over the masses must know the key that will open the door of their hearts. In post-Freudian jargon, of their unconscious. Hitler and Trump made their strongest appeal to those members of the lower middle classes who had been ruined by the Great Depression of 1929 and by the Great Recession of 2008, respectively, and all over again the inflation of post-COVID pandemic years of 7% annual inflation. The masses were these bewildered, frustrated, and chronically anxious millions. To make them more mass-like, more homogeneously subhuman, he assembled them by the thousands in vast halls and arenas where individuals could lose their personal identity, even their elementary humanity, and be merged with the crowd. A man or woman makes direct contact with society in two ways: as a member of some familial, professional, or religious group, or as a member of a crowd. Groups are capable of being as moral and intelligent as the individuals who form them. A crowd is chaotic, has no purpose of its own, and is capable of anything except intelligent action and realistic thinking. Assembled in a crowd, people lose their powers of reasoning and their capacity for moral choice. Their suggestibility is increased to the point where they cease to have any judgment or will of their own. They become very excitable. They lose all sense of individual or collective responsibility. They are subject to sudden accesses of rage, enthusiasm, and panic. In a word, a man in a crowd behaves as though he had swallowed a large dose of some powerful intoxicant. He is a victim of what I have called herd poisoning. Like alcohol, herd poison is an active, extroverted drug. The crowd-intoxicated individual escapes from responsibility, intelligence, and morality into a kind of frantic, animal mindlessness. In American history, There is no more cogent example of mob manipulation to commit a treasonous, violent assault on American democracy, the rule of law, and the U.S. Constitution than the attack on the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. on January 6, 2021, incited and led by Donald Trump to violently overthrow the U.S. government. During his long career as an agitator, Hitler had studied the effects of herd poison and had learned how to exploit them for his own purposes. He had discovered that the orator can appeal to those hidden forces which motivate men's actions much more effectively than can the writer. Reading is a private, not a collective activity. The writer speaks only to individuals, sitting by themselves in a state of normal sobriety. The orator speaks to masses of individuals, already well primed with herd poison. They are at his mercy, and if he knows his business, he can do what he likes with them. 20 years before Madison Avenue embarked upon motivational research, Hitler was systematically exploring and exploiting the secret fears and hopes, the cravings, anxieties, and frustrations of the German masses. It is by manipulating hidden forces that the advertising experts induce us to buy their wares, a toothpaste, a brand of cigarettes, a political candidate. And it is by appealing to the same hidden forces, and to others too dangerous for Madison Avenue to meddle with, that Hitler induced the German masses to buy themselves a Führer, an insane philosophy, and the Second World War. Unlike the masses, intellectuals have a taste for rationality and an interest in facts. Their critical habit of mind makes them resistant to the kind of propaganda that works so well on the majority. Among the masses, instinct is supreme, and from instinct comes faith. While the healthy common folk instinctively close their ranks to form a community of the people under a leader, intellectuals run this way and that. With them, one cannot make history. They cannot be used as elements composing a community. Intellectuals are the kind of people who demand evidence and are shocked by logical inconsistencies and fallacies. They regard oversimplification as the original sin of the mind and have no use for the slogans, the unqualified assertions, and sweeping generalizations which are the propagandist's stock in trade. All effective propaganda, Hitler wrote, and Trump, as most finely honed sociopaths instinctively know, must be confined to a few bare necessities and then must be expressed in a few stereotyped formulas. Fortunately for the world, Trump, not particularly bright but nonetheless like many charlatans, was endowed with some serious NYC chutzpah and street shrewd. And as also can be said of cockroaches, a hard-coded, hard-shell self-preservation instinct. These stereotyped formulas must be constantly repeated, for only constant repetition will finally succeed in imprinting an idea upon the memory of a crowd. Philosophy teaches us to feel uncertain about the things that seem to us self-evident. Propaganda, on the other hand, teaches us to accept as self-evident matters about which it would be reasonable to suspend our judgment or to feel doubt. The aim of the demagogue is to create social coherence under his own leadership. History does not repeat, but it does instruct. As the Founding Fathers debated our Constitution, they took instruction from the history they knew. Concerned that the democratic republic they envisioned would collapse, they contemplated the descent of ancient democracies and republics into oligarchy and empire. As they knew, Aristotle warned that inequality brought instability, while Plato believed that demagogues exploited free speech to install themselves as tyrants. In founding a democratic republic upon law and establishing a system of checks and balances, the Founding Fathers sought to avoid the evil that they, like the ancient philosophers, called tyranny. They had in mind the usurpation of power by a single individual or group, or the circumvention of law by rulers for their own benefit. Much of the succeeding political debate in the United States has concerned the problem of tyranny within American society, over slaves and women, for example. It is thus a primary American tradition to consider history when our political order seems imperiled. If we worry today that the American experiment is threatened by tyranny, we can follow the example of the founding fathers and contemplate the history of other democracies and republics. The good news is that we can draw upon more recent and relevant examples than ancient Greece and Rome. The bad news is that the history of modern democracy is also one of decline and fall. Since the American colonies declared their independence from a British monarchy that the founders deemed tyrannical, European history has seen three major democratic moments. After the First World War in 1918, after the Second World War in 1945, and after the end of communism in 1989. Many of the democracies founded at these junctures failed in circumstances that in some important respects resemble our own. History can familiarize, and it can warn. In the late 19th century, just as in the late 20th century, the expansion of global trade generated expectations of progress. In the early 20th century, as in the early 21st, these hopes were challenged by new visions of mass politics in which a leader or a party claimed to directly represent the will of the people. European democracies collapsed into right-wing authoritarianism and fascism in the 1920s and 30s. The Communist Soviet Union, established in 1922, extended its model into Europe in the 1940s. The European history of the 20th century shows us that societies can break, democracies can fall, ethics can collapse, and ordinary men can find themselves standing over death pits with guns in their hands. It would serve us well today to understand why. Both fascism and communism were responses to globalization, to the real and perceived inequalities it created, and the apparent helplessness of the democracies in addressing them. Fascists rejected reason in the name of will, denying objective truth in favor of a glorious myth articulated by leaders who claimed to give voice to the people. They put a face on globalization, arguing that its complex challenges were the result of a conspiracy against the nation. Fascists ruled for a decade or two, leaving behind an intact intellectual legacy that grows more relevant by the day. Communists ruled for longer, for nearly seven decades in the Soviet Union, and more than four decades in much of Eastern Europe. They proposed rule by a disciplined party elite, with a monopoly on reason that would guide society toward a certain future according to supposedly fixed laws of history. We might be tempted to think that our democratic heritage automatically protects us from such threats. This is a misguided reflex. In fact, the precedent set by the founders demands that we examine history to understand the deep sources of tyranny and to consider the proper responses to it. Americans today are no wiser than the Europeans who saw democracy yield to fascism, Nazism, or communism in the 20th century. Our one advantage is that we might learn from their experience. Now is a good time to do so. But for those readers of history who may fear the horrors of another American Civil War, I would suggest that you're too late. We are already in the midst of a civil war, a cyber civil war, for the soul of America and humanity, where the weapons of choice are not muskets but memes, in some cases waged by the implementation of very powerful automated and autonomous algorithms of computer code generated by unregulated artificial intelligence or AI. Hitler's Third Reich provides the historical precedent for the great efficacy of propaganda in waging a bloodless coup d'etat, with the German landmark propaganda film Triumph of the Will. The 1935 German Nazi propaganda film, directed, produced, edited, and co-written by Leni Riefenstahl. Adolf Hitler commissioned the film and served as an unofficial executive producer. His name appears in the opening titles. It demonstrates the highly persuasive power of visual media, a portent of modern-day propaganda, now orders of magnitude more powerful and effective through the omnipresent internet, most especially social networks like Facebook and X, formerly known as Twitter, in particular owned with highly partisan radical right curation by Elon Musk, who contributed about $250 million toward the re-election campaign of Donald Trump, thanks to the 2010 Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission verdict by the highly partisan conservative U.S. Supreme Court. A landmark decision of the United States Supreme Court regarding campaign finance laws, in which the court found that laws restricting the political spending of corporations and unions are inconsistent with the Free Speech Clause of the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Citizens United dubious precedent opened the floodgates of obscenely unlimited corrosive money for campaigns by Trump and radical right neoliberal Christo-fascists. So much for adherence to the laws avoiding even the appearance of conflict of interest.